You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 412. The trauma unit is in effect, and here we are to rock you like a hurricane. To the Punk News Podcast. We're rocking like a, like a hurricane, like the Scorpions. It's the Trauma Unit in effect, which means we have reviews writer Tom Trauma in the house tonight. Tom Trauma, what's the first Scorpions record that you got? Because little do people know, the Scorpions actually go back to the mid-60s, believe it or not.
The first one I got was actually their breakthrough hit, which I think came out in about 82. It was Love at First Sting. It was actually the album that has... Rock You Like a Hurricane. I think I have like the first four that they did for Mercury, like Love Drive.
Is that the one with like the seriously messed up album cover? Like one of the most messed up album covers in the world?
Like the gum stuck to the boob?
No, that's another one I got.
There's
the one that's got like the naked 12-year-old girl on it, and it's like really messed up.
Is that the Virgin Killer? See, that was like early. See, they went well back into the 70s, and I don't go that far back with them. I go to like 1980, because that's when the stuff started coming out on Mercury. If you go before that, it was just like they're harder to find German stuff. And I know a lot of people swear by that, but I mean, it was a different era. You know, even Rock You Like a Hurricane, you know, it casually uses the word bitch, which you now like makes people flinch. But at the time was like, oh, that's a compliment almost.
Not if it's in hip hop. And if it's in hip hop, it's okay. If it's in punk rock, it's bad. Adam White, naked 12-year-old girls on the album covers, super punk rock or pedophiliac? Is that a word?
I mean, it's an appropriate thing that sounds like a word if it's not a word. I would say that's pretty... Let's use the parlance of our times. That is problematic, John.
Yeah.
That is a problematic thing to do.
That is so... And the worst part is that's the dude... Well, I don't know if it's the worst part, but it's the photographer's daughter. Like, that's a messed up dude, man. That's messed up. That's messed up.
There's lots of other things that you do on an album cover.
Wasn't like the Blind Faith album cover, like from the late 60s, early 70s, wouldn't that have a young, real young girl on it, topless?
Yes.
And like Houses of the Holy by Led Zeppelin from the early to mid 70s, that had like a bunch of naked, small.
That's true.
But you know, and they had like 13-year-old groupies. It was a different era. It was all cool back then, man.
My favorite story, but one of the weirdest stories is that Alice Cooper was having a party, and there was like 14-year-old girls there as like party attendees, not as kids, as like party attendees. It's like, Alice Cooper, you're like 30. Why are there 14?
Average lifespan was only like 42 then. They were fully sexually developed.
The 70s were messed up, man.
They really were.
Messed up.
I got tickets to see the Coop, dude. I'm excited.
I'm seeing them
on
Friday.
Thing is, like, this is the 70s. It's not like we're talking about, say, the 1870s when there was no concept of teenager. Yeah. And, like, as soon as you were old enough, you went and worked on the farm. Like, there was absolutely... you know, a well-defined adolescence in the 1970s. Like, there was no, you can't make any excuse. They're like, oh, it was different times. You know, kids got older, you know, earlier. You know, if anything, they had less, you know, they were less pumped full of hormones than today's kids. They probably went into puberty later.
I don't know about that, Adam. It was like some of those most famous groupies, the one that you can, ones that you can actually name by names or at least recognize the names if you hear them, they were 15, 16 years old.
It's so like you turn on like music videos now, there's like literally like naked people like jiggling their hiney, and you're like, oh my God, this is so profane. But on the other hand, as Tom points out, Led Zeppelin had like seven naked preteens on one album cover. You know what I mean?
Well, so, and it's honestly one of the most stark, striking album covers you'll ever see. Tremendous piece of art and not at all sexual.
this so well segs into the thing that I wanted to ask Tom about on the show. Oh, boy.
But, well, by all means, Adam, take it away.
Okay. And Tom, I'm asking you this for two reasons. One, because
let me guess, because I'm old as dirt.
Because you are old as dirt, and you can explain this to me. But two, because I had just heard this on the radio and was consistently I have never not listened to this song and been utterly bewildered. Not so much at the song, because there's nothing to this song, but at the society in which that song was taken seriously, and maybe it wasn't, and I'm just not in on the joke. So this is what I need.
Tell me the song. I will either have a relationship with the song, or I'll be insulted that you think it's from my era. So
what if he's like Beethoven's
It's like Come On Eileen. It's like Come On Eileen. It's like, dude, I was like 2 years old when that came out.
Dexys Midnight Runners is a great band.
Go shoot, Adam. Shoot.
Tom, as an old, I'm not saying that like this was like, you know, the song at your prom or anything like that. I'm saying that you are gravitationally closer to this song than me, okay, and they are therefore the best qualified on this podcast to explain it.
Okay.
Bad Company.
Ugh.
Feel Like Making Love.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Why?
Didn't. But I mean, you can thrust to the guitar riff, dude.
Let's break down why that is so funny. How it's just like a middle of the road country rock song, and then all of a sudden you have this like big muted chord, like jung 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 jung.
Oh, dude, I mean, it's like the act itself. You know, you gotta go kind of slow. You go kind of slow, and then. I honestly sing that song to myself while I'm doing it, just so I know I'm doing it at the proper speed. You know, like when you do CPR on those dummies, you're supposed to have like a song in your head. I can't remember what it is, like 100 beats per minute or whatever. I play that song in my head, and that helps me be peak performance.
What I can't figure out is like, was that song meant to at any point have been taken seriously as either a serious love song or a power ballad, or I don't even know what you'd call it. Did anyone go into a record store in 1973 and buy the 45 for Feel Like Making Love and like go home and rock out to it and have it not have been hilariously weird?
It's such a great era. You know, you think about how great it was to be a man back in those days. All you had to do was, it's like, I feel like it. That means I'm doing it. You know what I mean? It's like,
To take that song at face value, you have to have a complete lack of self-awareness, like a complete lack of just how inherently dumb it is, right? But I don't think it's gloriously dumb. Like, it's not dumb in the way that, say,
to celebrate.
Yeah, it's not dumb in like the way that, say, like, I don't know, like there's like, say, like songs by like T-Rex or.
T-Rex is like, cool. What do you mean?
Yeah, Bang a Gong, or like that, You Should Be All Night Long or something like that.
Yeah, right. Or even like AC/DC songs are kind of like sometimes gloriously dumb, where like you look at it and you're like, all right, like this is inherently ridiculous, but it kind of knows it's inherently ridiculous and everyone's having fun with that. I don't think that Bad Company knew it was ridiculous, or at least they didn't. I don't get the impression that song.
There's no irony.
It's to be treated with any shred of irony or anything like that, right? Like AC/DC, right? They weren't mocking their own shit, but like, of course they were aware that like some of the stuff they were doing was just hilarious.
But like, big balls are supposed to be funny. You know what I mean?
They knew that they made a living making dick jokes,
right? So, but that's and
when they're in their 60s. But that's still, right? They got a new album coming out right now, and it's going to be 10 dick jokes. What's that?
Did you hear a ghost?
I lost you there for a second. All right, where are we at?
We're trying to
AC/DC
to
good, bad company, bad company.
I don't know. I got to say, Adam, honestly, that song's like always been a part of my lexicon because it did come out when I was, I don't know how old I was when I came out. I was born in 1973. That probably came out mid 70s, 77, something like that. So I've literally always known that song, and I've never really felt the need to dissect it. But yes, it's a terrible song.
Bad Company, so bad, and people love them. Honestly,
I don't think they're that bad, John. I generally, I mean, come on, like, I mean, they had some schlocky stuff, but like a Shooting Star is a schlocky song, but it's a great song.
Oh,
the way that verses broke down, the little drum fill and the acoustic guitar, ding, ding, I don't know. I listen, it's not like I'm sitting there listening to it. If that song came on the radio, I Feel Like Making Love, I would, for one thing, I never listen to that stuff on the radio, but I would turn it.
I can't think.
Okay, so like Shooting Star, oh yeah, but, or like, you know, Bad Company, dun, dun, dun. Bad Company, I don't know.
I can't even like eat. So for a lot of these like old classic rock songs, there's a lot that's been written about them. But even the things that I can find that have been written about Feel Like Making Love, and yes, I have researched this, are still utterly stupid.
You did your doctoral.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I couldn't find enough to fill the paper. So here's the Wikipedia origin Feel Like Making Love. It says, okay, this is Wikipedia says, Paul Rogers started to come up with the lyrics at a camp in California while touring the U.S. with Free. He was 19 years old. After several years, Roger played at the Bad Company guitarist Mick Ralphs, who threw in that big chord in the chorus, the muted da-da, that makes the shift from country ballad to chest-beating rocker. Like that's what's written. So, okay, so it's some song he wrote at a camp when he was 19, which I guess shows, but... Why?
He was sitting next to this girl, and she made him feel like making love.
You don't say it like that. You
did in the 70s, dude.
I don't think you did. I don't believe that, like, we came up with, like, Tact at some point in, like, 1985.
Adam, I disagree. Tact wasn't invented until the 2000s.
I actually think Tom's kind of right. I think especially in the 70s, especially in the hippie scene, you just go up to, like, a girl you think is good-looking and say, hey, baby, you feel like making love? And she might say yes because it's 1971. You know, and if you don't believe me,
even if it only works every 20th time, you're still ahead of the game.
And if you don't believe me, ask Nick Turner of Hawkwind, who is constantly posting this photograph of him and some like really good looking half English, half Moroccan chick. And he's always like, she was always special to me. Like he does it all the time. So if you don't believe me, ask Nick Turner of Hawkwind.
He feels like making love to her still.
So this
even though she's not interested.
This song reached number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. It reached number 5 on the Canadian RPM top singles. I don't know what that is, though. But it reached number 2 on the New Zealand singles chart. So what the fuck?
It reached number 1 in our hearts.
Imagine being 19, though, and selling literally millions and millions and millions of records over some song he wrote.
Well, that wasn't when he wrote. He wrote the song when he was in Free, which was his first band. One hit wonder. What's their hit, John?
Oh, Slow Ride?
All right now, baby, it's all right now.
Yeah,
that was their only hit. Slow Ride was Fog hit.
You're right,
man. I'm like a 70s rock dude. We ever play Punk's Points, but like for 70s rock, I crush these kids, crush them.
You guys know what other band Mick Ralphs was in aside from Bad Company?
I don't know who that is. I only know Paul Rogers.
Oh God, I know what you do. It was because John. It's a constant point of contention between the two of us.
Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Fuck
no. Come on, don't bring
me. I figured it had to be somebody Canadian.
No, it was Mott the Hoople.
Another one hit one.
John and I have some history regarding, but I don't remember what it is.
The history is that, like I was talking about how much I love Mott the Hoople, who, by the by, I listened to their last album again this past weekend, just called The Hoople. That album is so amazing. Like, front to back, it is, like, one of the greatest rock records ever. Anyways, I was talking about Mott the Hoople on the podcast, like, 5 years ago. And Adam White said, well, moving on from Mott the Hoople. And then I accused Adam of hating Mott the Hoople. And since then, I've accused Adam of hating Mott the Hoople, even though he insists that he doesn't. But I don't quite believe him.
So that the Hoople album, is that the one with all the young dudes on it? That literally is the only Mott the Hoople song.
That's their third to last album called All the Young Dudes.
Ah.
Oh my God! I know the story now that we were talking about. because that second Green Day rock opera record,
oh my god,
whatever came out after American Idiot, I don't know what it was called. Sad Eye Shadow.
21st Century Breakdown.
Yeah, so 21st Century Sad Eye Shadow. When that one came out, there was a song on it that was a single that was All the Young Dudes, like note for note. It was the same song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Out in your guns. Yeah. Man, I'm doing a really terrible job of humming songs tonight, guys, but I apologize. But I know the song you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. We will talk about punk music at some point on this podcast. I think we should
do about classic rock from the 70s. I mean,
should. I've been listening to, I mean, it's like part of my DNA. And when I was a kid, it seems like I started listening to like classic rock when I was 12 and I got sick of pop. And that would have been like mid 80s. So I just, it's like part of me, man.
I'll point out that Punk News does position itself as being a contemporary website that is aware of contemporary punk rock. And we do have some younger listeners and readers. Imagine being like 19 or 20, you tune into the Punk News podcast, and they're talking about Free, Bad Company, and Mott the Hoople. And the Scorpions. I mean,
point taken, John. Point taken.
So we listen to a strange amount of classic rock radio in our house, if for no reason then there isn't another option for us. Like the modern rock stations that are up here, the modern rock. Okay, like the stations that like in the 90s we would have called like the alt rock stations, right?
Yeah, they're all rock. They play Five Finger Death Punch.
No, that might be the problem now. We're like, so like stations like The Edge in Toronto that we still listen to a lot. It felt like that station played like sort of this mix of, you know, early 90s grunge stuff and like a bunch of kind of cool 80s new wave bits, especially the ones that are like really informed what became popular alternative rock, and that was fine. And they played stuff that was like of our generation, so they would be playing your Green Days and things like that, right? Along with your smattering of CanCon, because Canada. But unfortunately, they decided that they weren't going to just leave that station where it was as far as what audience they were chasing. And instead of like continuing to follow the audience, which is now in their mid-30s, they're like, we got to keep playing music for 17-year-olds. And so what they play now is not things that I like 9 times out of 10. So we can't listen to that. And, you know, what are other options? We have no other options except to, like, turn on these stations that are playing just sort of, like, middle-of-the-road, like, quote-unquote classic rock, like a bunch of, like, you know, 70s and 80s stuff, because a lot of that, like, middle 80s, new wavy stuff has sort of like drift. It got split where some of it went to the alt rock stations and some of it went to the classic rock stations, but now more of it is creeping into the classic rock stations, and that's just where we find ourselves because we have no other option. I know, internet, that there are things out there like your what do they call them, your Spotify's and your Apple Music's and things like that where you can listen to whatever the fuck you want, but this is like in our kitchen where there is a stereo with a dial that picks up an FM signal and is not a computer. So get off my back.
So screw you, internet. I hate you.
Yeah. And it's like, yes, I could connect a phone to it and make this happen and everything, but I want to turn to my 3-year-old and go turn on the radio, and he can run over there and slam his hand into the thing and the radio will turn on. And that works for us.
And you'll get Slow Ride or All Right Now or even...
Or feel like Making Love sometimes, right? So, but, you know, we got to take the good with the bad.
Well, if you couldn't tell, it's the slow news making punk news. So we got a light slate here for the podcast. So we'll just be BSing, but we got some interesting stuff to talk about. Let's hit some mail first. As always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. And we've got two interesting things here. The first is from Jules. Punk News: what is with all the weird songs starting and ending the podcasts? You made me listen to Right Said Fred. From Jules.
Oh, so I can answer this. John has been editing the last batch of podcasts because Greg has been busy trying to be an adult. And when John is able to act with impunity and no one is there to stop him, he will do whatever he wants, and a lot of us don't even notice. I mean, and because, well, I mean, I don't notice. I don't listen to the shows, but, you know, yeah, sorry. In that case, yes, I certainly don't notice. John has this unchecked power, as if he was, say, the head executive of a major country in a world, like the head of state, say, where John's party controlled all branches of power. And even though they knew that John was a crazy motherfucker, they decided to leave him there because it helped further their agenda. It's sort of like that.
Oh, see, I always saw myself more of as a mafioso, and then I do what I want, and people rarely challenge me because they know it might come at a price, and so I'm not authorized by anybody, but I'm not authorized by anybody else either, if you will.
No, we are effectively stealing papers off your desk so you don't sign an order to nuke Portugal.
Well, maybe I should be demanding more. This is from Gordon. Gordon has a bit more insight. Gordon says, I wanted to write in about the Target issue. One thing that I think you missed is that CBGB's and Max's Kansas City really were special places. No other clubs in the New York scene, except for maybe Danceteria later on, would have punk and rap shows, and everything else was disco and Eagles covers bands. I know I was there. Target's use of the CBGB name is more than just a goof. It annoyed me how many people laughed or didn't care or even defended Target. What this represents is the annihilation of cultural importance of, or the homogenization of mainstream culture, and maybe even a form of commercial mind control. I don't want to sound paranoid, but that argument does seem true. People that laughed about the Target issue are really short-sighted, and anyone who can just write that off or write off the destruction of CBGBs and the prostitution of the name is short-sighted and knows not what of which they talk. From Gordon.
There's a part of me that really wants to respond to something like that with more of like a punk rock kill your idols kind of viewpoint, where I want to look at it and say, like, you know what, like places like Max's and CBGB's, they were incredibly important, and they were these places that, you know, in retrospect that we can revere, but they were in their time and place. And now, even if they still existed, they wouldn't have some magical aura, right? Like they're not haunted by the ghosts of greatness past. They're just brick and mortar places, and that thing that we're nostalgic about doesn't exist anymore. So whether the place exists anymore or whether it's now being, you know, brand raped by, you know, a giant corporation, you know, it doesn't defame the memory of the thing, because the memory of the thing and the history of the thing, you know, is that it's immutable. You can't get rid of it. But that said, if I had a really cool club that was in my town and then some corporation came in and shit all over it, I'd be really mad. So, you know, speaking from afar, I try not to get mad about these things, but I'm, you know, if it was my club, if it was a place where I was hanging out and seeing shows and stuff like that, yeah, I'd be fucking pissed too.
What if like we woke up one day and McDonald's said, like, buy the Punk News burger, you know? How would you feel then, Adam or Tom?
That'd be great, great cross promotion.
I mean, our residuals from our Punk News agreements would go from like what, yeah, zero to
something. We could probably start making some,
like,
money up in here.
Like zero times 50 at least. So
yeah, along those lines, not to get too off track, but man, I'll tell you, the mosquitoes have really been bugging me lately. They're like, what gets my goat the most, I shouldn't even say what it does, but they're like, John, you're lazy. And I'm like, yes, I'm lazy because I'm typing up 5 articles between midnight and 1 a.m., in addition to not getting paid, in addition to doing 2 to 3 premieres a day, in addition to having a full-time job that is actually a full-time plus job. Yes, I'm lazy doing news articles that I don't even care about Green Day at 12:47 a.m. in the morning.
Sad. Typical millennial.
It's like you're so entitled. It's like they're so entitled. Like they said, this website is here to cater to me.
You owe us free content.
And the whole concept of Punk News is, no, we're not here for you. We're here for us. And if you want to be for you, then put in your fair share.
I believe what you're trying to say, John, is ask not what punk news can do for you, but rather what you can do for punk news.
I'm not even saying, I'm saying if you can do better, then do better or shut up. But you're not going to shut up because you're a whiner and you never do anything. And it's easier to whine because that gives you temporary relief from the dark, the darkening hole that is your, the void that is your life. Because you know, you know you've never actually done anything, nor will you do anything. And the critical irony is you could make something of yourself if you put in the effort, but you don't want to because you're too lazy. So you'll just sit behind your computer keyboard, typing away, laughing, and then realizing that you're miserable and listening to some beardo talk about how it's okay to be miserable and be a loser as long as you have whiskey and friends. Let's talk about
I wish I had some whiskey right now.
Honestly. Oh, God, I wish I had my tambourine. This is the kind of
I mean, you friends are great. Don't get me wrong, but whiskey would be good, too.
Well, you think I could sell that song to Bob Dylan because I got a tambourine, you know?
No, I was thinking about branding. I want to like you finish your little rants with like a little.
I was thinking about branding some punk news whiskey.
Let's talk about something cool. I just had to get it off my chest. Tom Trauma, who is Q Lazarus?
You know, it's funny. I have no idea. I saw this story, and I am not at all familiar with Q Lazarus.
I bet you are. It
sounds like I'm going to have to listen to a dissertation from Professor Gentili.
Tom, I bet you know who Q Lazarus is, but you know who Q Lazarus is.
Okay.
Adam White, without any of the other background, do you know who Q Lazarus is?
Yeah, so after Ra's al Ghul would be killed, they would have to lower him into the Q Lazarus pit, which had restorative powers.
Oh, the Bible dude, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so who here has seen Silence of the Lambs? Raise your hand.
Yes.
Tom, do you know that
watched it recently.
That while Buffalo Bill is dancing in his skin suit and he says, would you F me? I'd F me. There's a song playing behind him. And it's a very spooky, creepy,
weird. Yeah, it's a weird song. Yeah.
That song is a song by Q Lazarus, and the song is called Goodbye Horses. It was recorded a year before Silence of the Lambs and was not a hit, and then all of a sudden became a huge hit when Silence of the Lambs.
So that would have been about 89, 90, 91,
91
somewhere there?
91. And Q Lazarus is either a woman or it's a group that includes a woman. And it was... no one's exactly sure how the song was written, but the guitar player said he wrote the song and then met a cab driver who sounded like she was a good singer. He brought her into the studio and had her lay vocals on top of the music behind it. That's the song that became Goodbye Horses. And of course, in the movie Silence of the Lambs, the song Goodbye Horses, it sounds kind of like a downer, and it sounds like it's kind of like a song, I've had enough with life, I'm letting it all go away. The guitar player explains that really the idea of goodbye horses comes from like a Buddhist philosophy of giving away all your material possessions, so it's actually a positive song, which made it kind of interesting in that it uses a negative song in Silence of the Lambs. And I love the song Goodbye Horses, but I don't know if I love it because it's so creepy sounding because it's associated with the movie or not. If it wasn't in the movie, I don't know if I think it's as creepy and as interesting as it is.
I'll always associate it with tucking.
Well, that's part of it, you know.
I only listen to MC Hammer when I tuck in front of the mirror.
So Goodbye Horses was released as a 7-inch and a 12-inch single. The flip side was a song called White Lines, and it's unclear if the singer of Goodbye Horses is singing on the flip side or it's someone else, and it's just called Q Lazarus again. So it's not clear if the singer is Q Lazarus or if it's the Q Lazarus is kind of like a studio name for a group. Do you guys know what happened to Q Lazarus after she recorded the song?
Tell us the tale, John.
No one knows what happened to her. She disappeared. Even the guy that recorded the song had no idea what happened to her. She disappeared. She did a little bit of soundtrack work immediately after that, but then she disappeared off the face of the earth. And even the guitar player's like, I'm pretty sure that she's dead. I don't know where she is. I haven't heard from her in 20 years. Just a couple of days ago, literally a couple of days ago, some band was trying to record a cover of Goodbye Horses, and they made the mistake of thinking that they needed an artist permission to record a cover, which you don't need an artist permission to record a cover. But somehow, on social media, someone sent them a ping on Twitter that said, I'm Q Lazarus. And they thought it was like a joke, but then the person like sent them a picture, and it looked strikingly like a older version of the woman from the Goodbye Horses video. And they said, well, what's your name? And they gave her the name. And they Googled her name, and the name only came up once, like 5 or 6 years ago, in a lawsuit against a Hasidic Jewish bus company because she sued the bus company because they wouldn't hire women drive. Or they said Hasidic Jewish, but I think they meant Orthodox Jewish. Even they said Hasidic Jewish. And the reason that's important is that's a whole different civil rights issue that we can get into or we can't get into, whatever you guys want. The point being is that's why her name came up there. And then they trace that back, and that name matches the name on the record, on one spot on the record. So either it's the most advanced fraud of all time, or it really is Q Lazarus. And basically she said, I'm not interested in doing music anymore. I'm just reaching out to everyone. I'm still alive. I'm not dead. I'm glad people like the song, but it's not really me anymore. And then she disappeared from social media again. And I saw the picture looks like her. That's hard to fake. You know, and even more so, Q Lazarus, she's African. She's African American, or she's part African American. She has very distinctive looking eyes, and in the new picture, the picture of her as an older woman, she's got the same eyes, which would be very hard to fake. You know what I mean? So that's probably her. So this mystery, after 30 years, it turns out that Q Lazarus is still alive, and this is kind of like a big deal because this single goes for $40 to $500 on Discogs. And it's considered like this weird, like alt synth dance classic, and nobody knows the history behind it. And now we sort of know what's going on.
That's cool. You don't have very many, pop culture mysteries like that seem to persist. Well, and this one now doesn't because we have an answer.
It's very hard to be mysterious in the internet era.
So my guess is that she's probably just an odd woman, and I don't mean that derisively. I mean, she's probably just like a different. I don't think you can sing a song like that and not be a little different, you know. I still don't know if the song really is that great, or I just think it's that great. I really enjoy it. So we're going to play Goodbye Horses in case you haven't heard it. It's a really weird, creepy song. It's supposed to be a positive song. It's one of the most unique songs I've ever heard. I'm thinking about doing a news article on this on Punk News. Do you think it's worthwhile doing a news article about this on Punk News, or is it too far removed from punk?
It's kind of old news now, would be my fear.
Well, it was a couple weeks ago.
Because I've seen it on social media stuff.
So, I don't know. Anyway, so this is Q Lazarus doing Goodbye Horses. And this is one of two songs. There's also a demo cassette that's got five songs on it. But this is one of the only two officially released songs she ever released, Goodbye Horses by Q Lazarus. And we're back, and man, I don't know, Adam and Tom, do you guys like that song, or you just think it's an okay song?
I think it worked really well for that scene. I don't know if it's something I would sit in my living room and listen to. I guess I'd have to kind of listen to it on its own once, separated from its talking and whatnot.
It's very contextually connected to that movie. It's not something that I've gone and put together otherwise.
I've considered buying it, but I'm like, do I really need to be spending $40 on Q Lazarus, you know? But, man, I mean, it's got to be in the dollar bin somewhere, that single, right? I mean, like, not everybody knows that single's worth money, right? It's got to be in the dollar bin somewhere.
I saw so many records this weekend, dude, and I dug and dug and dug, and I literally, you can't find one good record for every 100, you know?
Especially now people know records
are worth money. It's all either 70s rock or, like, old, crappy show tunes stuff, it seems like.
Maybe Adam, you can like on Facebook. I see people like, oh look, I got all these Suicidal Tennessee records at the garage sale for $1. I got these Black Flags for $1. I got these Misfits for $2 each. I'm finding like Perry Como. Where are these people finding Misfits and Suicidal
exactly. Tennessee? Exactly, endless Christmas albums and classical albums, and yeah, Perry Como.
It's just to keep the dream alive. Where every time you do find a box of someone selling records for a buck, you know, you get down there and you're like, you know, like no more Perry Como, no more Perry Como, no more Perry Como. And then it's like 35 different Perry Como records and Tusk.
mostly right? Christmas.
And that's all you get.
And now, like, people trying to get $15 for their freaking copy of Fleetwood Mac Rumors from 1975, beat to piss. But
dude,
yeah,
dude, I wish, like, 15 years ago, I bought, like, every Fleetwood Mac record I saw for $1 because you can flip them now for $10. You know, like how crazy is it that Fleetwood Mac is worth almost what Apple stock went up? You know,
anyways. I was looking at this Triumph record at a flea market. Adam knows Triumph; they're Canada's greatest band. Got the magic power of the music in me, you know. But anyway, and she wanted $15 for this freaking used Triumph record.
I'd be like, broken right there in front of her.
Yeah, like no thanks.
Just hop the border into whatever. That's close to you, Sarnia, Windsor. It's probably Windsor's only about Triumph up to your knees.
you can't walk in anywhere without Triumph records stacked everywhere.
You kick them every time.
Well, anyways, speaking of legendary records, on October 7th, there's going to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest ever, punk rock spoken word event to date. It's called War Stories, Tales of the 70s and 80s Punk Mayhem, Told by the Perpetrators Themselves. And here are the people that are going to be speaking. Keith Morse of Black Flag, Mike Watt of the Minutemen, Jennifer Finch of L7, Dave Ketching of Tex and the Horseheads, Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Chip Kinman of the Dills, and Abby Travis of the Love Dolls and the Go-Go's. And it looks pretty cool. I'd go for this if I was out there. One of the commenters had a really, really funny comment. I'm going to read that right now. Oh, no, I'm not falling for that again. The last time I attended one of these, I got about 2.5 hours in, and I realized the massive spoken word show was actually a symposium.
That's one of the funniest things
I've ever read at the site. Anyways, this is cool. But I guess the question is there too much, I guess, nostalgia and looking back and telling old war stories in punk rock, or are we saluting history appropriately instead of selling it at Target?
No, I mean, these dudes still are around. They exist. They have the stories. I mean, and it's not taken away from anything. I'm all for stuff like this. The only thing that irks me is, and I'm sure he has his bona fides, so I shouldn't make fun of him, but fucking Flea, like,
oh, Adam.
Flea is in every, like, if you have any documentary about any punk rock thing, it's fucking Dave Grohl and Flea, right?
Adam. Oh my
God. I don't think Flea's at the same level as Dave Grohl, but yeah,
he is as far as showing up in documentaries.
It's like Ian MacKay is like the documentary guy, Henry Rollins, Keith Morris. Those guys all show up more than Flea.
I feel like I see Flea all the time, and then someone like John will be like, tisk, 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 he was in this or that hardcore band in 1982. And I don't care. I know this guy.
He is in one of the worst bands of all time. I will give you that. He is in the Bad Company of the 90s, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But he seems like a really cool guy. I read D.H. Pellegrino's biography relatively recently, and Flea was like one of his best buddies. And Flea, despite the fact that he plays horrible white boy funk, or at least he got famous playing horrible white boy funk before he got into mopey white boy sad alternative rock or whatever they play now. But Flea does not seem like a bad guy. So he was in Suburbia. I mean, you know what I mean? He has more punk cred than the three of us put together. He'll be all right.
Sure, but who doesn't? I'm just trying to say is that I feel like Flea ends up on the bill of a lot of this kind of stuff because he's Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, not because he's Flea from footnote, 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 some punk band he was in as a kid.
Yeah,
right?
Fear. No one's ever heard of the band Fear. They're not an important band.
We didn't mention him in the fucking article.
It was just a sideman kind of thing, though.
If Fear is such an important part of Flea's story, then we, who know this, should put it in the article, but we didn't even do that.
Well, Adam, you can either criticize or you can...
Flea can do what he wants. People can go see Flea. I get it. It's just one of these things where I'm like...
Dude, hate the band, not the guy.
Both Flea knows and I know that he's getting stuck on there because he's a name because of the Chili Peppers.
Here's a question. And let's attack Dave Grohl more than Flea, because I dislike Dave Grohl more than I dislike Flea.
Dave Grohl's fine, too.
Dave Grohl's a phony baloney.
They're both
harmless. I don't
harmless.
Think so. I think
they're
he's a big
harmless
kid
and
likes rock and roll. I got no problem with Dave Grohl.
You need people to play music on like that end of the spectrum to the mainstream, and that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with Dave Grohl or Flea existing or being in their bands or whatever. I just if you were to not tell me the lineup to this, I could have predicted that Flea would have been on it.
Here's the thing with Dave Grohl. Is Dave Grohl is in documentaries that he's got no business being in. Like the early DC hardcore scene. Yes, Dave Grohl was in Scream, but like the last era of Scream and not during the DC hardcore era.
Their horrible album, but yeah.
Yeah, or that you reviewed, Tom. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it was very mediocre. I was so like sad to say it, but it was not good.
Dave Grohl's in like early LA West Coast punk documentaries. Why is Dave Grohl? He knows he's not supposed to be in there, but does he care? I think he doesn't care, and I think he likes the attention. And you know, I think he knows that he has no business being there, but he likes being vaunted as the final word on rock and roll. Jackass.
I don't
know. If you go to Flea's Wikipedia page, everything that potentially makes him the person to be on this documentary is in a three-paragraph section called Early Life, which is followed by seven different subsections all about different Red Hot Chili Peppers eras. I'm just saying.
Hey, Adam, you know who funded Chuck Dukowski's first solo album with the Chuck Dukowski sextet?
Oh, well, when we get to the...
Flea?
Okay, so when we have the punk rock venture capitalist funding symposium...
You know, this symposium... This will for now be referred to as a symposium. It has a potential to be amazing. I talked about when I went to the Camp Punk in Drublick, one of my favorite things was at the end of the night, Keith Morris and Jello Biafra and a bunch of guys were just kind of rapping and just kind of having a free-form session. I think this has a potential to be tremendously great, but I also think it has at least a 20% chance of being a total freaking train wreck. So I would probably go to it if I were in the era. I like the idea of sort of taking in these guys' wisdom firsthand or sort of soaking in these stories of the early scene to sort of, you know, pass it along in like the caveman pre-spoken word way of, you know, trading information, passing it along and keeping the stories alive. So I'm totally cool with this.
I'll tell you
as
what,
long as you're not traveling.
To get all serious about it. But yeah, it's in LA. I mean, I'm not going, or it's on the West Coast. I'm not going to.
This is one of the things that does make me mad about the punk rock scene. Tom, you went to the Keith Morris and Jello Biafra debate, which is insane and legendary, but there was not that many people there, right, Tom?
No, far less. I mean, there was not a tenth of the people there that there was rooting for Pennywise earlier. Not a tenth.
Exactly.
Might have been a 50th.
I mean, like, when are you going to get the chance to see two literal architects of the punk scene, punk itself, in debate, and people decided not to go to that? That blows my mind.
But bro him, dude.
Anyways, speaking of people that don't like Dave Grohl, the Melvins and Alice's Narrow of Sleep are releasing a two-song 10-inch.
Osborne loves Dave Grohl.
No, he hates him.
Does he?
Well, he doesn't hate him, but he doesn't like him. The reason he doesn't like, well, there's probably a little bit of jealousy there, but the reason he doesn't like him is because he feels that those Dave Grohl is cheesy and Foo Fighters is a cheesy band, and that he gets all this attention that, you know, he probably thinks he should get. However, the main reason he doesn't like Dave Grohl is because the Melvins recently did an album where they had a whole bunch of different like musicians come in. This is 2014. They had a whole bunch of different musicians come in and play, and Dave Grohl said the buzz, "Oh, I want to come down and play with you." And Chris Novoselic will come too. And Buzz Osborne says, okay, that sounds cool. So they flew Chris Novoselic down to the studio. They were all there, and Dave Grohl didn't show. They called his cell phone. They emailed him, and he just blew it off. That's Dave Grohl for you, people. That's Dave Grohl. Anyways, well, look, I just blew my chance to interview the Foo Fighters. Anyways, Melvins and Alice's Narrow of Sleep are releasing a two-song 10-inch. It's called Sabbath. And it's going to be out through Amphetamine Reptile. And this is going to be another one of the pricey, like, rare Melvins things that is like $40, $50, or even $60 or $70. Although it likely, but will not definitely, also get a wider, cheaper release on CD with other tracks. The Melvins have hinted that they're going to be releasing an album that is the history of rock and roll. And unless that's been canned, which is a possibility, this will likely be on that. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this, but... I mean, this looks so awesome. Like the Melvins and Alice Narrow covering Black Sabbath or doing Black Sabbath type tracks. That would be awesome. The question is it worth $65? I did get the Melvin's off Red Cross split 7-inch for $65, and I am not sorry I did, because that is an amazing 10-inch with probably off's best live material.
$65.
It's pretty pricey, right?
Yikes. Yikes.
That's pretty up there. John, this is a U record. Are you going to spend that much?
If it's 40 to 65, I probably will, just because I love the Melvins. And these things have hand screen printed. I mean, it's expensive. And honestly, it is a little bit – like if it was 40, I could say, all right, $40. But 65 is unreasonably expensive, I would say. However, Buzz Osborne's argument is we only make 300 of them, and people buy them at that price. I'm not a charity. You know, I need to make a living, and people don't buy records anymore, and people rip it to the internet – right away anyway. So if you want the music itself, you can get it for free, but I don't have to go broke if you want a collector's item. So if people want the collector's item, they can get them. $65 is the cheapest art you're going to get, which is true. So that's Buzz Osborne's justification of this.
Which is not a bad justification, yeah. I should add.
I agree.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I mean, and I totally am guilty of paying way more than the medium is worth for records and things that have like custom art done on them. So, you know,
I mean,
sure.
You know, Melvins are one of my all time favorite bands. Sleep is one of my all time favorite bands. You know, they are art, and it's not just like a regular record that's printed. It's like actual ink on it that you can like see, you know, they're not hand done, but they are made by hand, but they're not hand painted, if that makes sense. So this sounds cool. Melvins are always doing weird stuff, interesting stuff, and that's why I love them. This looks cool. Although I hope they make an officially released widespread, if not version of this 10-inch, then they have it as part of one of their CDs they put out. So let's see here. What else we got to talk about? Oh, okay. I don't know if you guys are into this or not at all. Tragedy, the notoriously mysterious hardcore band or even death metal band, have released a surprise new EP. It's their first release in like 6 years. They didn't announce it at all. They had physical versions for sale at a show that they had. They barely even announced that show. And now you can stream it online. The new EP is called Fury. It's 6 tracks. And it's Tragedy doing what Tragedy does. It's probably a little bit quicker than the last album, which was called Darker Days Ahead. A little bit more hardcore than death metal, than Darker Days Ahead. But it's Tragedy doing Tragedy's thing. I have thoughts on this. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on this or not.
If only that, like, I feel very behind on the Tragedy thing, and for years we've talked about them with this like hushed reverence on Punk News because they don't participate in the internet and all this, and a lot of people that I know and respect have been going nuts about this release today, so it's pretty high on my list of things to go get schooled on. That said, explain to me this. It's on Bandcamp right now?
Yes.
Do they not shun the internet?
I guess they're changing. I mean, that's a good point, Adam. This is the first thing they have had on any streaming service. And
I mean, so, I'm not shitting on Bandcamp. It's great.
No, Bandcamp rules. Yeah. Nobody. Listen, Adam. No one's questioning Bandcamp. We're questioning all right, Tragedy.
Just. I mean, you know, I'm not judging them. It's a good tool. Tragedy. It's okay.
Who knows what they're up to, but I would guess is, I mean, the point of making something is so people can hear it, so I guess they're willing to make that concession. You know, or is it? You know, some bands actually do make things with the explicit purpose of it being secretive, and either you get it or you don't, and that's too bad if you don't, you know?
I'm increasingly running into bands that I feel like are being intentionally difficult for reasons of art, and the answer that I get from anyone that's ever involved near the band is just sort of like shrug, and that's kind of what you have to do with it. There's a band that I talk about quite a bit, John, that's on here that like all their shit vanished from my like Apple Music or whatever. So I went and I sent the label a message, and I mean the label's in the UK, so I figured that it's some international thing happened and it's not available in the store anymore. And I was like, hey, like, what happened to that record on Apple Music? It was really useful to me. And the guys were like, yeah, I keep telling them. I keep telling the guys. And then that's what they want. You know, artists. They're artists. And I'm like, oh, well, shit. I mean, and he's like, can I give you a download code for free? I'm like, no. Like I have the record. That's not a problem. It's just, you know, would be a little bit more convenient for those of us on the run if they weren't being artistes about where you can access their music. But hey, whatever.
I've actually not familiar with Tragedy, John. I never really listened to them.
Tragedy.
I just Googled them real quick. Been around since 95. Same four guys the whole time. That's pretty impressive.
Tragedy came up in the Profane Existence / Slug and Lettuce scene, and that they are one of these, you know, crust hardcore bands that, like, crust and hardcore bands say, oh, they're the greatest. They're the absolute greatest, you know. They've never compromised their integrity. They've never, you know, done something whack. They've never done something for money. They've always done it for the art. And we're in an interesting era where punk bands are allowed to do things strictly for the money now. I would say it's kind of easy to not do things for the money when there's really not that much money being offered anyways. Yeah. It's a little bit more difficult when you're Fugazi and the major label's like, we'll give you $2 million, you know. But even with Fugazi, it's not that difficult because they were making money. They were making legit money, you know. So, anyway. Go ahead, Tom.
No, it was just, you know, I've just been thinking about this physical thing. You know, I'm a big physical buyer. I know, John. I know you are too, Adam. But I don't know if you are as much. So every year we do our best of lists at the end of the year, and I always do 20 LPs, and I know you do too, John. And for the last 4 years, of the 80 albums on my list, I have the physical for 78 of them.
Ooh.
And I wonder how many of the other of our other devoted reviewers / you know, I mean, I wonder what, like, the young kids, do they even buy, you know, because if I'm making a list of the 20 best albums that come out in a year, I'm going to try to get every one of them. But this year I've noticed it's been much more difficult. Some of my favorite records were only made 300 and I didn't feel like shelling out the big bucks and they're all gone. Used to be, you usually had a choice of CD or vinyl, and I generally 80% of the time would opt for CD just for convenience and price. A lot of them this year, I noticed no CD. You got to buy vinyl if you want physical. And it's just, it's and some of my favorite records are only made 500 physical copies to begin with. I mean, there's no money in that, right?
Well,
I don't know what the hell's happening with the, I mean, can you say that, John? Do you have almost, if it's on your top 20 list, do you buy it?
If it's on my top 20 list, almost definitely I own a copy of it. That being said,
of the two that I don't have, one I could get fairly easily if I shelled out the money, and the other one is much more obscure. It would be, I could probably scare it up directly from the band.
The other thing is, Tom, you make a great point. It used to be, oh, I'll check this out, $12. Yeah, let's get it. Now it's like, do you want a physical copy? You know, $25 plus $10 shipping. You know, big difference. You know what I mean? So,
Well, I'm struggling too, and you know, I'm at the end of my iPod. I'm at the end of my iTunes, and you know, traditionally we always review everything off, you know, downloadable files. And I'm like, man, I'm becoming the old guy. It's like, if you want me to review something, I almost have to have a physical copy of it because I don't have a very easy way to. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's, you know, things are changing so fast. I just don't know.
Yeah, I think you need to stay strong on this one because you do what, like, is my fantasy here. Like, when you said that you had, like, 78 of the 80.
And that's not all I bought. I'm just saying, of the ones that made my top 20 list, I just happened to look at them. And this year, I think I'm of my top 20 right now, I think I'm at 16 or something. But there's, like I said, there's one of them I know I'm not going to get. I mean, I just know it's going to be in my top 10, and I'm not going to get a physical copy of it. They only made 300 copies of it, three different colors. Sold out fast. I am not going to be willing to shell out what it takes to get it.
Is that Nightbirds?
No. That one, I'm fine with the $8 CD from Fat.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
I have no problem with that. I still, for me, CDs are still more convenient. Even though this year, I'd say the breakdown of my top 20 as far as my physical this year, I'd say it's about 50-50. I'd say about half LPs, half CDs, if I had to guess. I mean, without, you know, looking at the list.
I mean, this is an interesting discussion to me. So I definitely am on the other end of this spectrum in that I don't have a lot of the things that I've listed, but that's mainly just a financial thing from and really really
you can, listen, you got a young family, I can totally respect
well,
that.
Well,
but
not,
my
not
fear
so
is
that,
people
but also
are making
from
their list without hardly listening to this shit, you know what I mean?
Well, no, that's true, right? And but I was looking at it sort of from like what John's standpoint is, where it's like, ooh, so if I want that, it's going to cost me what, like, especially like from Canada, right? It's going to cost me, with shipping and everything like that, it's going to end up costing me like $40+ to get that record over here.
Well,
right?
And let's face it, John's in a little different position than us just because he doesn't have children, and that, you know, his records are his children. No, but you know what I mean. And we have to answer to someone else to spend that kind of money.
Right. There's a part of it too where I'm treating my past year's sort of top lists as a little bit of my hunt list, because even though, like, even if I could just flippantly spend, you know, $40 on every record that I'd want to, I'm not a sucker, so I'm not going to do that either, right? Like,
but
I'm not
to make it clear, I'm not doing that either.
No,
I don't have that kind of money either.
Yeah, well, but you also accept CDs as a viable alternative, which I don't. Yes. Right? So in my case, it's more like, all right, these are records that I know I love.
You're a snob, Adam, a hipster, Daniel.
I know. If I see them in a store, that's where we're gonna pounce on them. And I have some phone list somewhere that's like, you know, these are things that you've purported that you love that you don't physically own. And those are the kind of things I'm usually rifling around.
Yeah, I have that phone list also. But I also love to order from labels. You know, my record stores around here are fairly reasonably priced. I mean, they're good price, actually. They're both real more than fair. But the best way to go is still straight from the label. But the problem is, excuse me, there's no good indie distributors anymore. So you're buying one or two things from a label. And even American shipping, to send, it's just not viable unless you order multiple things. You get killed on the shipping unless you order multiple things. Well, all these labels are sort of scattered. There's all these tiny little labels, you know. It's very hard to find even two things necessarily from a little tiny label that you want. So it's become very challenging. I wonder where it will end for me. You know, I'm already, you know, I got a kid leaving the house here in October, and then, you know, probably another year I'll probably have another one leaving, and I'm sort of already going, what am I going to do with all this shit? You know what I mean? I'm at least 20 years from retirement, but I'm already going, oh my god, I've been hoarding these. I got so many records, so many CDs, so much stuff.
I hear you, Tom, but I know a musician, I know a musician that's kind of well known, at least in the Philly scene. He got divorced and he had a lot of records, so he had to count the records as assets in the divorce. And he lost all his records. And every time I see him, like, he brings it up. He's like, I can't believe I let my records go. I can't believe I let my records
like
go.
Like that NoFX song. Well, the thing is, my wife couldn't care less about him. And that's the thing, too, when you have kids, you realize, and my, you know, my daughters started collecting records, and they care a little bit about some of the stuff, but you just have this vision of someday I'm going to be dead, and they're just going to, like, back one of those giant dumpsters into my driveway. And just, like, all my, like, hand, you know, my books that I had custom signed from, like, Joe Keithley and the singer from Negative Approach or whatever, they're just going to take it, throw all this stuff in this big dumpster because they're not going to want it. These are the things you think about when you're 45, you know?
That's but in a way, like, isn't that okay? Like, you got your use out of them, and then you're dead, so what do you fucking care?
I don't know. It would be I'm tell you what. I hope to die young. No, I don't know what you say. I was gonna say, I hope to die young enough that I'm gonna have my wife call John Gentile up. He's gonna rent a U-Haul and just come here, and he can just have my stuff because he's the only person who really will appreciate it properly.
Well, thank you, Tom. I guess the hope is to get your kids into it, and that way you kind of pass it along like a heirloom.
And that could happen. That could happen later. I don't know. I mean, my daughter, they're all big book collectors. We got tons of books in the house. I'm sitting next to three packed bookshelves right here, right now. But, you know, it's just, I don't know what they want. But I've been specifically collecting punk biographies, and whenever I get a chance, I get them signed. I've never been a big autograph collector or guy to get records signed or anything. But as I've gotten older, my heroes have started dying off. If I get a nice book, I like, you know, have a nice inscription in the, you know, front cover. Or something?
I think I subconsciously think that I can take it with me. Do you guys think you might have that as well?
I don't know.
Like, but you were into amateur like Egyptology or something,
you
right?
Can't
like,
take what it you with you. I know that for a fact. But what about this? Do you ever fear that you'll be you know, someday, you know, I'm 45, maybe 25 years from now, I buy a nice condo in Boca Raton, Florida, and I'm driving a Cadillac Eldorado in the left lane, like 52 miles an hour, and wearing like Hawaiian shirts and whatnot. And don't you, you know, will I still want to listen to it?
Yes.
And will my tattoos look silly?
Yes.
You're old and wrinkly, so you look silly anyways. I kind of envision a time where you know what, I kind of like look upon my kingdom and just go like, fuck it, and just like throw a match on the ground and put on some cool sunglasses and then walk away as it explodes.
I thought you were gonna say or that when you retire you'll finally be able to listen to all this stuff. You know, it's like, oh, I can retire now. All I could just sit around and listen to like 5 records a day, 8 records
well,
a day.
I mean, I'm looking forward to that. But then what if I do and I sit down and I'm like, this is all bullshit. And then I do that, right?
Like, man, this sucks. You know what I want to listen to? A little Feel Like Making Love. My Bad Company.
Somebody play a song.
Despite the fact that you haven't been able to get an erection for 10 years.
Somebody play a song. We'll come back. I had some stuff to talk about, but I don't feel like talking about the stuff we want to. So maybe we'll bullshit some more.
I don't even have a song. I don't know. Like, you better give me one more break. You better,
all right, here. I got this one. So, I keep running into bands that I'm trying to write about that exist in these complete black holes of Google, where like there's this whole generation of like really super tiny localized bands that existed in the like punk bands that existed in, say, like in the 80s that were pre-internet, were never big enough to have anyone, you know, chronicle them later in some book about the scene or whatever, and just for all intents and purposes do not exist in today's information economy at all. You can't find anything on them. And so here's the one that I was most recently working on, and it's a combination of like there not being info there, but also the bands not being digital natives themselves, right? Like, so like they didn't grow up with this urgent need to, you know, eulogize their own existence for all eternity like the rest of us. So they, you know, they're happy just to, like, you know, be a band and then not be a band, and the fact that it's not on the internet or anymore doesn't factor into their lives. So the band I'm talking about is one out of Ottawa that existed from, as far as I can tell, like 1989 to 1990 or something like that, that was called The Trapped. Now, I went on to Facebook and I was like, hey, Ottawa music people, of which I am friends with, who knows anything about The Trapped? And then John, the dick, hops in and he's like, Trapped, and shares me some.
It was like a 90s or like some,
there's some, what are they, a new metal band or
yeah,
something?
Yeah. They have one hit.
There was some band from America that was pretty big called Trapped, and that existed in internet era. So that's actually muddied the pool of trying to find anything about The Trapped, because you just get results about that thing. And so I went and I Googled around, and all I could find were like message boards from, you know, from like 2099 that somehow still were running, where people had like mentioned them here or there, you know, a fairly empty and anemic Discogs entry for the one 7-inch the band ever had. And then thankfully, and this is why we're playing them, someone that had gone and ripped the record. But anyway, so here's what I know about The Trapped. So The Trapped, you know, again, pretty much localized to Ottawa. They existed just at the end of the 80s. They put out one 45 at the time that was called A Minute Late, A Dollar Short. 4 songs were on this thing. It was on a label called Trash Tone Sound Products, which is similarly non-existent as far as the internet goes. And I sort of thought that was it. Like, I don't really have any other info about this. But then I was speaking with, doing an interview that's going to run on Punk News soon, with a guy named Chris Page that is the singer of a band called The Stand GT that was a mid-90s kind of guitar rock slash garage rock punk band that was they were contemporaries with like the Smugglers, and they played a lot with them in and around Canada. And he caught on that I was looking for this, and he's like, actually, we toured with the Trapped. So I got a bunch of info out of him, which was cool. So anyway, so the Trapped, they toured with the Stan GT. They toured with bands like the Ripcords and Random Killing in and around 1990. And in fact, one of their only recordings outside of this EP that they had was a live bootleg that the guys in the Stand like taped off the board at one of their shows. And then the Stand guys basically drove around in their van for years with this live bootleg in the tape deck. And then the cassette was stolen, so then all those songs were gone anyways. But the one kind of like thing that came out of that little scenario is that one of those sort of never before heard songs that they only played live, the guys in the Stand were really into, so they covered it on in the studio on one of their actual records. And now that the Trapped have come back and they're playing reunion shows, they were able to like go back to this cover of their live bootleg to kind of like relearn the song that had been lost to, you know, some fucking tape thief.
That's cool.
So I thought that was kind of neat. So the Trapped, again, when I say they're back in that they're playing reunion shows. So they're playing the Bose Oktoberfest at the end of the month, which is something that Punk News is sponsoring and that I'm doing a bunch of writing for. And they were just like they're on the roster of bands, but no one's making a big deal about it. And no one would have made a big deal. I think like I'm the one making a big deal about it. I think if you're like an old punk dude in Ottawa, you see that they're there and you're going to see them. But I'm the only one making a public big deal about it, I guess, at least on the internet. So anyways, the Trapped were cool. Their stuff was cool. It has a very while referencing this band is going to bring too much ska into the equation, they have a very late 80s, early 90s sort of Operation Ivy feel to the recordings, where that, you know, just kind of scrappy young kids playing, you know, vaguely sometimes ska influenced, but, you know, just punk rock at that time. And it totally fits within, you know, you could totally see those two bands as contemporaries, although I'm sure they never met. So in any case, I had to play a song from the Trapped, from that single 7-inch that they have that apparently costs a lot of money on eBay these days. This song is called Car Bomb. So it's from the Trapped, not Trapped, from Ottawa, from 1989, 1990. Here you go.
happy to fight for something you don't. It's so easy to kill when you don't even know their name.
Fun fact, Trapped is from Los Gatos. I did not know that. So
what was their one hit?
Honestly, Tom, I'm not that hit on Trapped.
Do you like making love? Oh, no. Let's see.
I think there's a song called Echo. I couldn't tell you. Anyways, we had some other stuff to talk about, but it's kind of boring. Independent newspapers are folding up. The LA Weekly, everyone's suing each other because they're all evil. And the Village Voice is no more. It's a shame. Print media is better than digital media, generally speaking. And if anything, it's more research.
Headstrong. That was their big hit. Headstrong, I'll take you on. Headstrong, I'll take on anyone. Remember that one? 2002.
Nope.
2002. It was sucked.
Anyway. I'm sad the Village Voice is closing up. The LA Weekly, let it rot. It's a bunch of evil people running it. Well, I don't know if they're evil.
I agree about the Village Voice. I never read the LA Weekly, but the Village Voice was such a great paper.
Maybe evil's too strong. I guess it's extreme greed. Now, they've got sinister motives, so that's evil, I'd say.
Or if not like, evil. What is sinister motives? Like, raise Cthulhu? Like, what is sinister
motives? Try to make money.
Their sinister motives is they bought the LA Weekly, but they want to keep it secret that they bought LA Weekly because the people that bought LA Weekly are far-right reactionary conservatives, which I would not say in of itself is evil, but, you know, they're anti-abortion, they're anti-women's rights, blah, 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 all that stuff, and they're doing it in a secretive manner. I would say perhaps it would not be evil if they were upfront about it, but because they're doing it secretively and on the sly, and also their head editor, like, really hates gay people, which is lame. I don't know. If not evil, then bad.
John, I wanted you to go through and read all of these stories as one giant block, so I could respond with a very appropriate to the times womp womp
or
to the whole thing.
Well, you can still womp womp it if you want, and we'll all wait.
No. You can't just womp on cue. But I think that there are serious and interesting issues to talk about in that whole thing. And it probably deserves its own space, not like the ass end of the podcast.
But we've talked about it a lot already, too, you know? And we've talked about whether or not it's punk news, and it astounds me that people don't think this is punk news, you know? And also, we've had people like, well, who cares about print media, which seems very short-sighted to me. And you know, I'm just annoyed at a lot of people, Adam. In general, I'm annoyed at a lot of people.
People are annoying, John.
Why can't everyone just do exactly what I want them to do, Adam? You know, although I will say I am still on a high from Summer Soiree too, and not to be a dick about this, but I'm going to be a slight dick about this is, as the listeners recall, is I had competition from another promotions company, which I like and which I respect and has done way more for the Philadelphia live music scene than I ever will, mind you. But they were my competition for that night. And I was a little bummed out that some people that I like and some people that I respected picked the, quote, cool show over my fun or dorky show, if you will. Adam, Tom, is this Schadenfreude? Tell me. The show that I saw as my big competition that had way, 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 way more people going to it on Facebook, mind you, had less people than my show. Is that Schadenfreude?
Yes, but so what?
If you're happy about this, then
I'm pleased. Yeah. I'm not pleased that they had fewer people. I'm pleased in that I did specific
tactics. You must name the band, John.
Oh, well, I already did it. It was Impalers, you know. But I mean, I got nothing against them. I've certainly got nothing against
Arthur. Is that a Is that a punk band?
There's two punk bands called Impalers. There's three. There's a metal band.
I'm only familiar with the metal band called Impaler.
There's a metal band called Impaler. There's a ska band called the Impalers. And there's a hardcore band called the Impalers. This was the hardcore band called the Impalers. And there's probably other bands called the Impalers, too. I'm not happy that there was fewer people there, but I was concerned that I might not sell out. I was concerned that I had a significant portion of my audience had people trying to draw them to it. So I worked really hard and did tactics to get people interested in my show, and it worked out. So that's why I was pleased.
Well, good.
By tactics, you mean like traps, misdirection?
Yeah. Tactics by – I went to a lot of shows and handed out a lot of flyers. I had a fairly active social media presence, but I didn't want to be too active and annoy people. I went on the radio, and basically the whole way that I present – see, I presented my show as the – anti-cool people show. See, once I got the kind of vibe in Philadelphia, the other show was the cool people show, I was like, screw it. We're just going to be friggin' nerds and like wacky and fun and not – we're going to be the fun show where we don't care about being cool. We care about having fun. And that's how I positioned my show, if you will.
Oh, you don't mean like a pit full of punji sticks that you covered in leaves?
In front of the other show?
Yeah.
Well, I did that too.
Oh, all right. That's good then. That's right. That's good promoter stuff. Yeah.
It said something about me that even though the show was a total success, my feelings were still slightly hurt. You know, what did that say about me? I've been thinking a lot about that. I don't know.
John, it says that you are a delicate flower who just needs a little bit of whiskey and friendship and, you know, cry out your problems.
That's true. That's true.
Fuck, what are we doing? Is this show over? Is Tom playing a song? Are we talking about
anything else?
I'll
tell you what, I love
the fact. Can I go to bed?
I need to go to bed too. It's very late, but I love the fact that we talked about nothing. I think that's great because the news this week was sort of lame. And I'd like to know of your 20 favorite records of any given year, our loyal listeners.
Well,
how many do you buy?
Tom, I will point out. I didn't mean to cut Tom off, but I will say, Tom, even though this week's news was lame, at least we didn't have any severe criminal infractions by...
You know, we didn't have any... Even though we talked about underage girls naked on album covers, we didn't have any actual, like, punk people being accused of pedophilia, so that's a small victory.
But to reiterate Tom's question, which was a great question, is let us know, of your favorite records of the year, how many do you buy? That's physically. Or digitally.
Because I'm 45 years old and I still probably buy 30 to 40 new. I'm going to say average at least 30 new releases a year. That's new releases.
I buy a lot of used releases, but not that many new releases.
Well, I do that too, and that's why I have a big stack of shit on my stereo that I don't even have time to listen to. I really should probably.
Tom, when you retire, you'll have all the time to listen to Perry Como that you want.
Listen to all my Dokken albums when I was a kid. Well, yeah. But anyway, so shall I play a song? Okay.
We'll go out on Tom's song. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Tom Trauma. Well, actually, before Tom, Adam White, any last words, anything you want to send the people out on?
Baby, when I think about you, I think about love. Come on, Adam, you go, love.
All right. That's all.
Tom, take us on out.
I don't know if I can top that. All right, So I just reviewed the 7-inch, and it hasn't even run yet, but it probably will by the time this podcast comes out. Even though we're turning around pretty quick again, kids. We actually premiered the video for it. I don't know, a couple months back, but then some record pressing issues slowed down the production of this record. But it's a band from Kansas City. And they're called The Uncouth, and they're kind of a street punk band, and they just released their new 7-inch. It's called Just a Matter of Time, and I got to say, I love this. It's a great – it's got a street punk thing going on, but it's also got, like, a real chaotic, like, early hardcore. Reminds me kind of like, Black Flag, like, Fix Me / Nervous Breakdown era. It's just got, like, a real undeniable intensity to it. So, anyway, this is The Uncouth from Kansas City – doing Just a Matter of Time.
running, dog held by a chain that's about to fucking snap. I know you see it in my eyes, you hear it in my voice. You wish I would settle down, and I wish I had a choice. I'm gonna lose my mind. Word, I'm gonna take it out on you. I'm gonna lose my mind. I'm gonna lose my mind. I'm gonna lose my mind. It's just a matter of time.
Sun and moon, and they will shine.